Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the OA Serenity Sunday Meeting Podcast. Serenity Sunday is now hybrid, meeting in person at Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills and on Zoom. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroups webpage at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live in either iteration. Now that we're meeting in person, Serenity Sunday has regular meeting expenses and would appreciate Seventh Tradition donations to help support the meeting and this podcast. You can donate via Venmo
at Serenity Sunday 2023
or through PayPal, serenitysunday1212@gmail.com. The opinions expressed on the Serenity Sunday podcast are those of the individual speaker and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. And now, our speaker.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lindsay. I'm a compulsive overeater, bulimic, restrictor, and grateful member of Overeaters Anonymous.
Hi.
I don't see Alan, but thank you to the fellow Alan who asked me to speak today. I have been in Overeaters Anonymous for 26 years. I'm maintaining a 5.5 year abstinence from bulimia, from binging and purging. I don't spit up, throw up, or purge my food in any way, shape, or form, no matter what. That is my absolute bottom line. And by the grace of God, I haven't done that in 5.5 years through this program. I sponsor, bless you, two women, and I'm sponsored. I make minimum 3 in-person meetings a week now. I go to a meeting in this fellowship almost every day. Sometimes more than once, like today, 2 in-person meetings today, which is such a gift. I have a clear definition of abstinence, which I just shared. I have a food plan, just 3 meals and 2 snacks. I've navigated how much to eat with outside help and this program. I never went at trying to figure out my food by myself and without a professional. I work the tools of this program. And most importantly, I work the steps. And in the last 26 years, I've worked the steps numerous times in various ways, from the OA workbook to the big book. And now with my current sponsor, I'm working on my 8th and 9th step again. And it's different this time, but I'm always on a step. And my sponsees are always on a step as well. And we often direct our calls, which are daily, to the steps. And how the step work intersects with whatever life stuff is going on or whatever feelings and thoughts are going on that we want to talk about. So I'll tell you a little bit about where I came from, what it was like, and what it's like now. But I do love to be really fresh and in the moment and share something first within like the last 24 hours. So last night I was driving home from an area where I'm in California now. I live in LA, so from Santa Barbara. I did a day trip to Santa Barbara, which most people probably wouldn't do, but I did a there and back for something very special, and I drove alone. And as I was driving, all I could think about is what a miracle it is that I'm actually able to drive 2.5 hours without stopping at every single fast food restaurant along the way, that I could drive in the morning and in the evening without stopping at gas station bathrooms, puking my guts out, or vomiting into bags, which I've done, and tossing those bags out in towns that I have never heard of. That I could actually drive, be trusted, that I can trust myself driving with my higher power to be safe, to be respectful of myself and other people on the road, you know, that I could actually show up for a spiritual event, which it was, and have this incredible experience, come back here, sleep after a big day and not, you know, spend the evening, like the late night, the witching hour, as I call it, you know, doing my old business. And then to wake up, I actually taught a fitness class before this, so I still have some adrenaline kind of coursing through me, but I'm settling. And now to be here and be of service in this way is nothing short of a miracle. There is nothing unmiraculous about those last 24 hours for me, because I'm someone who is powerless. I'm a powerless compulsive overeater bulimic. I'm powerless every day. I wake up powerless. And every day I have to take the first steps, or I get to take the first steps, or I choose to take the first three steps to remind myself that I'm powerless and I need a power greater than myself to have a semblance of sanity and normalcy in my physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual life. So that was the last 24 hours. And it's just a miracle that I'm standing here, you know, and by the grace of God, I'll get door-to-door abstinent. And that's how I live my program. That's how I live my life, is I go door-to-door abstinent, D2D. If you've been on meetings with me, sometimes I use emojis for that, because you can use the door emojis and then put a little Pam knows, a little arrow, because that's it. It's just door-to-door. And this program has proven to me that there's enough recovery and energy and heft and wisdom and knowledge and higher power to get us door-to-door abstinent one day at a time. Where I come from is I grew up like always really loving food. I was an eater. There was nothing. I wasn't leaving anything on my plate. I absolutely gravitated towards sweets. I got really into my sweets, even though we barely had them at home. My father would sneak. He would like spike my cereal with, you know, something sweet and sweet cereal, sugar cereal, and then hide the sugar cereal for my mom. So my mom thought that all I was having was like, you know, cornflakes. That's true. And then I would get, you know, these little hits of sugar here and there, and then go to my friend's house and have like their sugar and their sugar laden confections and baked goods that I was never, ever, ever allowed to have. And then I started like getting really specific. Like I would trade portions of cakes at like birthday parties. I'm like, do you want the crunchies part? And I'll have the frosting part. Like weird little fixations on sugar. I was never really into other ways in my teenage years of like getting high. I never drank. I didn't, you know, smoke weed. I played a lot of sports. I danced. I was creative. I did a lot of really fun things. I was also an academic, and I just leaned into food just enough to take the edge off at times. But my eating disorder really manifested and exploded when I went to college. I share often just the origin story because it's just so important. It's so vital. It's just that for me, that memory that I do recount, you know, where I was playing sports, I was pre-med, I was very, very stressed out. I wasn't playing. I was getting benched in, you know, athletics. I had a clean uniform at every tailgate, which was not used, you know, what I was used to. I didn't really have much in the way of skills to deal with that disappointment and hurt and frustration. I started binging at tailgate parties. My coach told me I, you know, needed to lose weight. I started putting weight on. I lived in a dorm that was very uncomfortable, a co-ed dorm, lots of like, you know, boys and girls on the unit, on the unit. I eventually get to a unit, but this was a dorm. In the dorm, it was very stressful for me. And I was in one that was next to a laundromat, you know, the washing machines, the washer dryers. And I just one day after binging just thought it would be, you know, it's like the whiskey and the milk. I just thought it would be a good idea for me to just throw up my food. Just this once. I'll never do that. I've heard of that bulimia thing. I would never do that, but I did that. And then that was it. I was off to the races. I was powerless as the day is long. Now that does not happen for everyone. Sometimes someone would binge and they're not going to do that again, or they would throw up and they're going to get sick and they're going to stop. For me, it was the opposite. It was like I threw gasoline on a fire, and within a month or two, it was 10 to 15 times a day, binging and throwing up on a college campus, like a zombie who was also in complete shock of like what was happening to me. It was like, I'm not this person doing these things, but like I was, and it was terrifying. And I was really desperate. And almost immediately I started asking for help because I was like, this is crazy, you know, like this is just like crazy. So I went to like nutritionists and student services and all this. And I ended up in an inpatient unit per their suggestions. And I said, okay, like if that's what we got to do, like let's do this. And so I go to like bulimia rehab, but it was really like a psych ward. And that was terrifying and traumatic for me. And I share about that to give you a sense of the condition I was in when I showed up at your doors. Like I did not roll in, you know, just being like, hey, I overeat a little bit, I've got 10 pounds to lose. Like I was completely, I mean, I certainly wanted to die. I had put on about 35 to 40 more pounds. You know, I was a Division I athlete. Now I'm obese for the first time. People are teasing and bullying me, you know, at times for weight gain and family stuff and what happened, you know, to Lindsay and all, you know, I was beyond. I thought I was incapable, not only of recovery, certainly of being honest with myself in various ways that I'll get to, but like, I thought I was one of the unfortunates that wasn't going to get this. I was an extreme case. I was beyond what y'all could do for people who have food problems. I was wrong. I was wrong. You know, yay, good news. I eventually started working this program out of, you know, just sheer desperation because truly nothing else was working for me. I heard things in the shares, in the rooms, even though a lot of the women were much older than me. I just heard things that I resonate. I heard people talk about eating out of the garbage. I heard people talking about not being able to stop no matter how desperately they want.
5 minutes.
Thank you. Making all the promises. And, you know, my entire recovery, I think, came from that GOD, gift of desperation. You know, my God was a gift of desperation. And the people who took me in, you know, under their wings and in their arms in this program, I will never, ever, 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 ever forget. I appreciate them. It's part of my program to really reflect on the people and the way this program has saved me over time. So I did have stretches of abstinence until I started relapsing in a certain way. I was chewing and spitting, which people don't often talk about in these rooms. I understand that it is a behavior that one can feel very shameful about. Even I certainly felt ashamed that I was doing that. I certainly knew it wasn't abstinent, and it brought me to my knees. And I recommitted to this program. I changed it up. I got a sponsor in New York, and then moved out to LA and found a sponsor who worked the same exact program as the sponsor in New York. So it was a God wink, you know, kind of a transition. And in recovery and in the steps and in learning to lean on a power greater than myself, on learning to surrender one day at a time to a power greater than myself, you know, I have discovered a level of resilience and emotional stability and ability to show up for life and for people and for responsibilities that I never had with any kind of consistency before these rooms. I mean, what I do now and how I live my life, I think of some of the really difficult things I weathered in this incredible gift of recovery these last 5.5 years. You know, I lost my dog, my precious soulmate dog, who was really how I came to understand a higher power. I did that without turning to food. I went through a very bad breakup, which, you know, I thought that like, as soon as I got abstinent and fell in love, I was like, this is it. Like, it's going to be part of the bells and whistles. Like, you know, where do I shop for my dress? I was wrong. You know, he broke up with me. That was dark. It was a dark few months for me. Like, but I got through it. But, you know, I share what's on my heart in meetings and at the meeting level, at the sponsor level, with fellows, of course, and that gets me through. And, you know, having this compassionate, loving God, which I do have as a result of, you know, this certainly steps 3 and 11, but, you know, being in constant contact with my higher power. So it's like when the going gets rough or difficult or dark, I have places to go for the light, whether it's you guys or my spiritual practice. You know, I said this to my sponsee last night. You know, the trick is to not be tricked, to not be tricked by this disease. Like, this disease wants to take me out. It is always available for that. No matter how far and deep into my recovery, it will chirp. It will come alive. It will tell me things that are lies that I used to think are true. Like, you're a piece of shit. You don't deserve to be in a relationship. Like that, if I believe that, yeah, I'm going to go to the food eventually. That's the point of that voice. It's part of the disease. It's the tentacle. It's trying. So the trick is to not be tricked. Right. And my first step, like, that's step one for me, is an admission. It's not answers. I spent a lot of time. Why am I eating? Why am I doing these things? Right. Okay. Like, yes, to self-examination and getting to some places, certainly with outside help and whatnot. But for me, the most important thing about step one is the admission that I'm powerless. So it's like when life is coming at me and I'm going through challenging times and circumstances internally and around me, I get to settle with that admission. Oh, right. I'm a powerless compulsive overeater, bulimic. I admit that. I need your help. I need your help. That's for me what I need to do daily to avail myself to help. Because if I'm not admitting that I'm a powerless compulsive overeater, bulimic, then why would I ask for help, right? I'm just going to be totally self, you know, propelled by self-will, self-propulsion. And eventually that leads to self-will gone riot, you know? And I think that, you know, other challenges that I've gone through in the last, you know, few years, like I have a certain path that I've chosen, and I have, you know, a parent who vehemently disagrees with that path. And at times has been very aggressive about expressing that to me. That's a very diplomatic way of explaining what my, that's very diplomatic. Yeah, that's been extremely hard at times to deal and, you know, with that. And so I've learned boundaries, and I've learned how to appreciate that if I didn't have that contrast, I would never have developed the kind of inner voice that I now have, which is completely motivated and fueled by God. It's so loving. Like, my higher power is literally like, what's up? What do you want to do today? Like, what's your dream? Like in Pretty Woman, like that, you know, what's your dream? What's your dream? Like, that's my higher power is a hype squad and like a complete, like, loving, I mean, it was even reflected to me last night. Like, it was like the creativity, it is fun, it is service oriented in many ways, it is purposeful, it is on purpose, it's intentional. All that comes from my higher power. And it's like, if I didn't have another voice or multiple voices of this disease of, you know, certain people who were in my inner family circle, so, you know, vehemently at times disagreeing with what I was doing and choosing, it's like, I probably never would have leaned to this voice, which I so prefer. Ergo, that's what this whole disease has brought me to too. It's like, I don't wish that I was bulimic. Like I certainly don't wish that upon anybody else. And I don't have any control, and I certainly can't go back. But one way that I help deal with the fact that I feel like I lost some really good quality years of my life in this disease, is that I'm able to say that being in the disease then did lead me to this recovery, you know? And maybe if it wasn't so severe and so bad, I would not be here, like on a Sunday morning in between jobs, sweaty, and like kind of chilled, because you know that feeling. It's not the best feeling in the world. Sorry, it's a little gross, but like, you know, it's like, I I would not be working this kind of program. I would not be going to my home group tonight carrying literature. I would not be working for the intergroup, which I also do now as an office worker. I would never in a million years be working this program as hard. And that's an
airport. 3 minutes.
Thank you, John. You know, if I didn't have that setup, because the thought of going back to that keeps me in action. You know, I did have an opportunity last night. Also was speaking to a sponsee to talk about thinking through the drink. And I said, you know, thinking through the bulimic episode, I said that maybe takes a little longer than thinking through the drink. It takes, a bulimic episode is like a whole thing. It's like a long thing. It's like first the food and then you're purging and then you're getting rid and then you're covering up and then I'm probably starving next. It's like, it's so long. Like, I don't even want to take my brain space to think through the drink of a bulimic episode. It's just gnarly. And I was able in sharing that to even have that moment for myself. And I just said, thank you, God, that like, I don't do that today. And I pray for people who do. My recovery is a miracle. Any of us, all of us who are here abstinent right now are living miracles. There are people out there now, especially in these tough times, who are not abstinent. They are not sober. They are not okay. I pray for those people. And I know that in my life, even if I don't have like certain bells and whistles, it's like I have so much to be grateful for. I genuinely feel that. I do not have to act as if I did for a while. But now I have a genuine, like, core level gratitude that I come back to, that I am not in this disease. Even as I work through my character defects and I work through navigating and accepting life on life's terms, which, you know, for this recovering control freak, it's hard. You know, I want to get in there. I want to get in there every day on something, you know, and it's like most of the things I want to get in there to control are really, they're not mine. They belong to higher power. It's like hands off, back away, you know? And beyond that, what can I also share? Gosh, I've never like run out of like stuff that I want to. Usually I sometimes go over, but you know, how I eat, I will say, I did go through probably all versions of food plans at some point, even in recovering in this program. By the grace of God today, I do have a sort of red light, yellow light, green light approach to my food. I do sometimes occasionally eat red light foods, which are mainly foods that I have at times binged in my life. Most, if not all of them, do not exist in my home. As my sponsor says, we're not roommates. And I tend to never eat them alone if I can help it, just because it, the association for me. So if I'm going to have something, it's usually in some kind of community.
That's
or
time.
Thank you. I'll wrap up. But by the grace of God, I have a neutrality around food, and a normal body weight. You know, I'm down 30 pounds or whatever it was, and up about 15 or so from my bottom, and I don't weigh myself. And I have, you know, when I go to the doctors, and I have a serenity and a freedom today that is just beyond my wildest dreams. So thank you so much for letting me lead. And with that, I'm going to turn back to the format.